Good afternoon. Mr. Segedie has indicated we have the minimum for a quorum. We'll start the meeting. Minutes, hopefully everybody's had a chance to look at the minutes from the March 13, 2014 meeting. Chair, entertain a motion.
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Item 3, staff report. Jason.
Thank you. Financial progress report was in your folders as attachment 3A. We're 5/6 of the way through the fiscal year. Happy to report we've only expended 75% of the funding, so we're well within budget. And at this time, would ask to entertain a motion to approve the financial progress report.
Second.
Motion second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Technical progress report. Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, we have a visitor today from Columbus and Federal Highway. I wanted to introduce Carmen Steiner, who's sitting next to Krista back there. She is doing planning and environmental 50-50 for Federal Highway, and she will be coordinating with us. She is our representative for FHWA, so happy to have her and be able to see some of the stuff we do for our policy committee, so hopefully it will be somewhat entertaining. For the technical progress report, just wanted to say a couple things. First, many of you have seen, we've been sending out emails regarding Switching Gears Active Transportation Conference. This is going to be on June 26, 2014. We're doing this through a generous grant from the Knight Foundation. We're bringing in two keynote speakers. One is Jason Roberts from Better Block, who kind of pioneered guerrilla planning, so to speak, doing pop-up infrastructure, putting paint on the ground and just making a bike lane for a week, that kind of thing. And then we're also having Dave Cheslovic, who is the former mayor of Madison, Wisconsin. He's now president of the Wisconsin Bike Federation. He will also be speaking. So we're looking forward to that. It is free to attend, and lunch is provided, and we'd really like to see a great showing from our membership. So if you or any of your staff would be interested, the registration is on switchinggears.org, and we would love to have you participate. Second, just going to give you an update on the two planning grants. The biggest thing is tonight, if anyone has a more than a passing interest in the Montrose area, there is a public meeting at the ACME at 5 o'clock. It's basically an open meeting where I think Metro RTA and AMATS and the local townships are going to be trying to get some input on the community of how they'd like to see changes in the Montrose area. So it goes from 5 to 7. We're hoping to have a pretty good attendance there. And then in Barberton, everything's moving smoothly, and we were expecting for both of those to be wrapped up here in the fall of 2014. So with that, if there are any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them, but that's all I have to report at this time.
Question about the active transportation conference. Is that primarily for officials, or is that general public, or what's the target on
it? It's open to everybody. I think in our minds, the speakers are really brought in to talk to public officials and people that I think, or even grassroots organizations that want to get something done in their community. So I think it's really good for kind of the professionals that we work with, but also members of the general public that have an interest in kind of getting these types of things started.
What were the hours?
I believe right now the hours, we've got roughly 9 to 3. Is that correct, Crystal?
Yeah, Curtis, if I could just add and thank AMATS for allowing Metro to be part of this meeting this evening. It's actually a joint meeting because we've got a federally required process for public involvement. So these are going to be, it's going to include some discussion about service changes for the fall. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Curtis. Victor will now do a presentation on the federal funds report.
Thank you. State fiscal year is going to end here at the end of June. But GoDOT checks down their accounting, I think, like after the first week of June. So in reality, we only have like 3 weeks left in this fiscal year. If you look at the table, it's attached there to item 3C. For fiscal year 2014, you'll see there that there's a handful of projects that are not in bold, means that the funds have not been recovered yet. For the most part, I'm pretty confident that those will all go this year. A couple of them, as you can see, have been moved over to 2015, at this point we know those are not going to get recovered this year. And then if you flip the page over, you can see the balances for each of the fiscal years. There in 14, we have a balance of about $6.5 million that we carried over into 2015. That number might creep up a little bit because what we're seeing is when these projects do sell, they sometimes sell under the amount that we have programmed for them. So that number might go up a little bit, and that will be carried over into 2015. One of the things we have to deal with, and we mentioned this at the last couple of meetings, is ODOT sets the threshold that we're allowed, the amount of funds that we're allowed to carry over for each of our funding programs. The majority of that $6.5 million is CMAQ funds, and we've exceeded those thresholds. So what we did was, this amount was a lot larger, but what we did was trade with a couple of NPOs in Ohio, about $5.5 million worth of funds, and we traded with them. And then within the last couple of weeks, we had another NPO approach us, and we traded an additional $400,000. So we have about $2 million roughly out of the $6-some million that we have to ask a waiver for ODOT. And what we're doing is we're saving up for future year projects, and that is an acceptable waiver, so we just more or less have to go through the motion to request that waiver. Yesterday, our TACTIP subcommittee had a meeting. Two of the main issues they talked about was the statewide CMAQ funding program, and then also our being a condition rating data collection effort. As far as the statewide CMAQ funding program, there was an application that was approved at the statewide level. It was a little bit, it wasn't very user-friendly, so some of the MPOs have taken it and massaged it a little bit, and we found an MPO that did a pretty good job at that, so we're going to ask them to kind of use that and then change the information to match for our area. So we hope to get that wrapped up in about a week or two. So that means about 2 or 3 weeks you should be seeing an email notice starting the whole process of requesting projects for CMAQ funding. And then what will happen there is it'll probably be about a month's time to get those applications done. Once those come back, the TACTIP subcommittee and our staff will be working together. Over the summertime, we'll get those applications scored and ranked, and then we'll bring all that back to this committee at the September meeting for approval, which number of projects will go down to the statewide level. At that point, that'll start the process to compare those projects to the rest of the projects that have been submitted throughout the state. And then by the end of the calendar year, hopefully by December, we'll know which projects got awarded funding throughout the whole state. The last item is that paving condition rating data collection. Just as a quick history, ODOT used to collect this data. We used it. They collected all the federal aid roadway system. We used it to score our resurfacing projects. 2 years ago, ODOT said that they're going to quit doing that. They were going to just collect the PCRs on the state route system only. So then that prompted us to start our own effort to get this data with some of our own funding. Well, we've been moving in that direction, and as you may recall, Summit County has kind of taken the lead to be the fiscal agent for this whole process. We're moving forward in that direction, and then over the last couple of weeks, we got notice from ODOT that they're going to go back to collecting the PCR data that they used in the past. So, the PCR subcommittee discussed this at a meeting they had last Monday, and then the TACTIP subcommittee talked about it again yesterday. And basically, at this point, we are looking to still provide some kind of AMS assistance to those communities who are still interested in getting the PCR data, going through the PCR data that we had already started. And also that data, that data will be a little bit more detailed than some of the stuff that we've gotten. So that's all I had.
If anybody
has a question,
I'll have to
answer.
Are they going to use the PCR or PCI?
Well, yeah, the effort that we started is going to be called PCI. I don't want to kind of confuse the issue, but it's the same thing, it's just more details. But ODOT does have the PCR. That's what they call it.
If I could interrupt, I think the point was we're going to use the local or the state in our effort to grade projects.
Well, I think that's one of the things that we need to examine. It depends on how many community. If we can get everybody to still buy into doing the PCIs, we may end up using that in the next round of funding, but I guess it depends.
Right now, our funding policy looks at the PCR. But I think if we get comprehensive enough data in time for the next round of applications, we probably would switch to the PCI because it's better. If the timing worked out where we were taking new applications, we didn't have it yet, we'd probably continue on with the PCRs till we got it. Another thing we'd like to do with it is, a lot of you guys are familiar with our crash reports we do where we rank all the locations. I think from an AMAT staff perspective, we'd like to be able to get a real good regional snapshot of how all the pavements look so we can let you know where your roads stack up in comparison to one another. And we might even try to work that into the funding policy in the future where, just like if you have a high crash location, you get more points. You know, depending on your pavement condition index and where it stacks up on that list, that we might be able to get a little bit more rational scoring of the projects. And then the final thing would be for the smaller communities that don't really have the engineering staff to do a lot of this analysis in-house, it would be a nice tool for them where we could go, especially to the smaller villages, and say, hey, here's your three worst roads you ought to consider applying for funding, either from us or OPWC or some other funding source.
Thank you. Any further? All right. Thank you. I think we move on to item old business, item 4. None. New business status is surface transportation reauthorization. Mr. Baker again.
Chairman, the past few months we've discussed at these meetings the status of the federal transportation reauthorization, and today we'd like to give you a little bit more detail. Two related events are approaching this summer and fall. First in August, and you can see by this chart, it's forecast that the Highway Trust Fund will become insolvent. And then second, beginning of October, MAP 21, our current highway authorization, will expire. Both of these events, if they are allowed to happen, would have huge ramifications on AMATS, and we wanted to just give you a little bit of detail on a little update of how and why these things are kind of taking place. The reason for both the trust fund insolvency and no reauthorization both hinge basically on the gas tax. Federal gas tax, as some of you are aware, is 18.4 cents a gallon. It hasn't been raised since 1993. It's the most significant source of revenue for every highway, transit, bike, and ped project that includes federal funds. And over the past 20 years, as many of you probably also know, that the purchasing power of the gas tax has dwindled quite a bit due to inflation. While MAP 21 authorized almost $40 billion for highway and transit projects, the gas tax alone is not able to keep up with the commitment that we've made. This first slide is, the point is to show sort of what has been going on with the trust fund balance. The balance is in green. It turns to red as it drops into the negative, and that's forecast to happen later this year. As you can see, the light blue is the total outlays, and dark blue is the actual gas tax receipts, plus the general fund transfers. I think one of the assumptions that we sometimes make is that roads pay for themselves. I think that obviously is not apparent anymore. It's not really true anymore. Since 2008, over $55 billion has been provided to the Highway Trust Fund to keep the fund solvent. So that's right from general revenue, and mostly that's borrowing from other countries, probably China, to make this happen. So the biggest issue, I think, for the trust fund being in decline and potentially becoming insolvent is that the Highway Trust Fund and reauthorization bill, the federal program, is a reimbursement program. So when the states plan big projects over a number of years, if all of a sudden the trust fund becomes insolvent, those reimbursements will not take place. And also there's going to be no money for new projects to begin developing. So that's sort of the ground zero, I think, worst case type scenario, is that states like Ohio would be likely to lose close to almost $1.5 billion worth of funding. Nationally, it's estimated to be about $47 billion, which, you know, also goes to show we had about $38 billion per year. We're forecast to spend about $47 billion through the program. One of the reports that's come out recently is the T for America, Transportation for America. They started to look at basically what happens if there is this kind of doomsday scenario. What does it mean to regions and what does it mean to states? Their methodology was basically looking at what our current estimates are for funding through MAP 21 and looked at kind of by state and region what we're really possibly looking at for both highway and transit projects. As you can see, Akron, if you can't read it, is at the top of the screen, you know, set to lose about $17 million of funding if for some reason we do not have a solution for the trust fund insolvency. So basically what have been some of the discussions or some of the talks that we've about how to avoid insolvency? And I think you've heard me probably mention a few times over the last 6 months some of the proposals that have slowly trickled out from Washington. One, President Obama has proposed using funds from corporate tax reform as a way to put more money into the trust fund. Senator Boxer has suggested a wholesale gasoline tax as opposed to a retail gasoline tax. VMT, I know we've talked about it for as long as I've been here, is still a non-starter. I don't think the NSA did anything to help with that. There are privacy issues around with that issue. Also, as we've done in the past, the trust fund could borrow from the general revenue fund, or we could default on our obligations, or, as this committee had recommended in 2010, we could increase the gas tax, the current gas tax, by 10 cents a gallon to help provide more revenue. The Transportation for America, T for America, they looked at this, in their report, they looked at two things, and what they really were more worried about was how much federal investment needs to be added to the current program, because even if spending stays the same, it's not enough. So they're looking, their recommendation is that we need to have a bill that's close to about $70 billion a year for a federal investment in transportation. This would be both for the formula programs, so the programs that the state receives, the programs that we receive, but also provide more funding for things like New Starts, Amtrak, and Tiger Funds. As many of you know, Tiger Funds were very, very necessary for the Kent Central Gateway project to happen. And so there are some real positives to having programs like that. Their main idea for revenue is to, they say the simplest way is to add 17 cents to the current existing gas tax of 18.4 cents, so not quite doubling the gas tax. However, they are recommending or are open to all of the above suggestions, I think some that we listed, looking at even replacing the gas tax with a 11% sales tax on gasoline, a fee for barrels of oil purchase, an additional sales tax to fuel purchases, and also indexing the costs of indexing the cost of the gas tax based on construction costs, which actually would be different than what some people have said about tying it to the CPI, because my understanding is the construction costs can sometimes be higher than the CPI in terms of inflation. So we've heard a lot of good ideas for potentially how to raise funding, but I think the reality is that what we see at the federal level is there's not much will really to do any of these options. So what do we think is going to happen? I think based on past experience, as a lot of you have sat in this room, we had many extensions of former bills. This last bill was a two-year bill. And we also have done a lot of borrowing from the general revenue fund. We probably imagine that that's what would be the case again. We spoke to ODOT about this issue, and they're operating in the way that there will be an 11th hour save the day agreement. Probably won't include, you know, anything groundbreaking, but they're operating as though these projects will continue, they are going to develop them, and they will be constructed. And while revenue is a large part of this, I think the other issue that we have to look at is, and we spoke about this as well, is that how are we spending the federal money? States still spend between about a third and a half of their allocations on increasing highway capacity. You know, from our stance, our region, our average bridge age is 49 years old. Our roads, we have 12% of our roads are in poor condition. And I think the AMATS philosophy has been over the last 5 to 7 years that we really need to preserve and maintain the existing system over expanding the highway capacity. And I think we've done that in our funding decisions. And if you've seen it, the last round of funding, I think we had one capacity-adding project out of all of our projects. So in October, MAP 21 will expire, and hopefully this trust fund problem will be fixed permanently. You know, in our mind, we're responsible for really emphasizing the fix at first, small-scale bike ped projects, transit improvements. And we really think also that whenever this new bill comes around, that policies need to be put in place where we really recognize the importance of MPOs and really the local control that comes to our regions because of our agencies. And we really think that that's important and needs to be stressed right now. But I think, you know, what we wanted to do today was kind of provide just a little bit of an overview, give you some details. I think we saw this week, actually, the Environment and Public Works Committee from the Senate put out a six-year bill for about $240 billion over that 6 years. And their solution was to just add $3 billion from the general revenue fund every year of that program to keep the trust fund solvent. So my guess is as we get closer to sort of that last day of the deadline, we're going to see more solutions like that and kick the can down a little bit further. But I think one of the things that we've talked internally, and I know, Jason, I can hand it over to you, is that, you know, that we feel like as an agency, it's our responsibility to try to get in touch with our membership and our leadership and congressional representation, potentially writing a letter, communicating to them some of the things we'd like to see. I think we'd like a little bit of, you know, like to hear your thoughts on it and if there is support for something like that. With that, you know, Jason, I don't know if you want to add anything, or I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, and that was a great overview, Curtis, and I think that, like Curtis said, we talked a little bit at the Technical Advisory Committee about we would like to write a letter, I think, that would communicate a lot of the same information that Curtis presented today to go to our congressional delegation. We've got four congressional reps that serve the AMATS area, so in some ways that, you know, we have access to about a quarter of Ohio's congressional delegation that way. Also our two senators, and probably to the Secretary of Transportation, to let them know about local needs. And like Curtis said, this can always sound self-serving, but we feel like this process here, where all the local governments come together and collectively make decisions on funding, makes a whole lot of sense, because it's the closest to the people, as opposed to decisions on funding being made in either Columbus or Washington. And it's been a great process, so we definitely want to make sure that it's preserved, and we really value the ability we have to pass funding on to all of you, you know, that need it and can actually see it have tangible results on the ground. So what was suggested at TAC, too, was maybe that if we work on a letter that we could provide it to all of you, which we'd be happy to do, and if you felt so led, you could send letters of your own, taking whichever points you felt were germane to your community, to our representatives. I think the other thing would be, just like Curtis said, and I'll turn it back over to Gene now, if there's a little bit of discussion or points of view or local issues we might not be aware of that you'd like us to communicate to legislators, we would be happy to do that as well. So I'll turn it back over to you, Mr. Chairman.
I guess I just ask one question to start it. The last letter that was sent collectively from AMATS, did we get any response back? when we asked for the 10% increase
support? We did in some ways. Much to my unbelievable surprise, George Voinovich actually mentioned AMATS and that resolution that we did. And I think when he was still a senator on the Hill. So that was actually kind of a cool thing to say, because Senator Voinovich was very supportive of raising the gas tax. And but that, as you can imagine, that kind of didn't get a whole lot of traction still, because hence Curtis's presentation today. But no, after that, you know, I think what Curtis said crystallized the heart of the issue really well. There really hasn't been either House or the White House or either party, no one really willing to stick their neck out and say, we need more revenue. And like Curtis alluded to, I mean, another potential discussion is maybe we don't need more revenue, maybe we should start to spend this money very differently. But unfortunately, I think that discussion is probably even harder for people to have than to just raise more revenue, even though that's not an easy discussion either. So that's kind of where we are.
Any other comments? So, since the philosophy of spending money that AMATS has followed for a few years that I've been involved has been primarily for the repair and replacement and maintenance of existing infrastructure rather than new construction. And if the interstate highway system was initiated in the 1950s and 1960s with 50-year estimated useful lifespans for most of the projects, right? But the bridge is supposed to last for 50 years. So that would mean that all of them are going to be replaced. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, and I think that's one reason why this maintenance issue, especially in a region like Northeast Ohio, because we're kind of a legacy region. I mean, those highways were being built first here. Now, they weren't building lots of interstates in Arizona in 1956 or in Las Vegas. So I think that is a huge issue for us. And you also kind of point to the federal program in 1956. It had a very clear mission. It was mostly to build the interstate highway system. Since that pretty much got done, even in places like Wyoming, by the late 80s, early 90s. And I think ever since the early 90s, although some of the transportation bills started to emphasize things, you know, before 1991, the federal government didn't get involved in spending money on, say, bike paths or sidewalks or even some of the public transit was later in later transportation bills. But I think it's fair to say the federal mission is kind of vague now. You know, like when you look at the funding programs, some money goes to Amtrak, some goes to transit, some goes to bike and pedestrian facilities. Not I don't think anyone's proposing that shouldn't happen, but if you were to try to kind of figure out what the federal government's priority in how its funds are being spent, what it is, there's not a real clear, it's kind of a almost a be all things to all people approach. And for us as an MPO, I mean, the one advantage is we can spend that money within federal guidelines however we want, and that's actually a great flexibility and boon to our region. But I think from our standpoint, it would be, we feel like the federal program would be a little more effective if it was a little more focused. You know, for example, because I think, as a lot of you realize, I mean, the federal funding decisions aren't value neutral. When the interstate highway system was built, for good and for bad, it had big effects on where people lived, where they worked. You know, you couldn't, it caused a lot of benefits, but they're also, you know, we use a lot more fuel now than we did back then because things are more spread out and things like that. So I think we'd like to see long-term policymakers in Washington try to figure out kind of a new mission that would reflect the wishes of the majority of people. And I think that's probably even a farther off policy discussion than the issue of shoring up the revenue. I think that will happen because when you look at current trends, I mean, there are, some of it's anecdotal, but I think younger people are more interested, say, in being able to have more transportation options. Like you said, Chris, things are getting old and have to be fixed, pretty soon we really can't run away from that anymore. So I think it will change over time, but we're not quite sure how yet or when. Sorry, that was a long answer.
Brian, did you
just an observation that something that Jason and I shared just recently about the connection with this and land use. When you listen to the reports on how the economy is doing, it's new housing starts. And I don't know about, any engineer, I've not heard anybody who sits at this table ever say they have more money than they need, ever. And I've never heard any county sheriff or any police chief or anybody say they have more money than they need. But when you measure success with new housing starts, and I see that at the Regional Planning Commission, for example, that I sit on, a developer buys up a farm, a 100-acre farm, and it's, we got development, great. Well, for PARTA's purposes, that's another 90 houses that we have to service with door-to-door service. That we that is our least efficient, most expensive form of public transportation. And EMS is always a concern, emergency response is a concern, sewer and water, and I use Molloy Road as my example of a road that can't support the 300 houses that are built on it. And in just this winter, holy cow, it had potholes that would swallow my Suburban. It was insane. And I know Mickey doesn't have, it needs rebuilt. It needs built to be almost like a collector or something like that, and I'm sure he doesn't have money for it. So I would support, from PARTA's standpoint, I would support asking one for a raising of the gas tax or a solution of some kind. Do something, for God's sakes. Looking at the last SDP ask where he had $20 million and there was, $140 million worth of requests, I don't think we're hurting for projects. Even if some of those projects were maybe to improve something that didn't necessarily need improved right now, it certainly will soon. And then on a broader scale, tying some of this stuff to land use. I mean, the city of Kent, for example, bought $10 million worth of land just to encourage development in downtown, as opposed to all those folks moving out to the edge of town where it's a lot cheaper to build because I can just buy a farm and build everything there, and I don't have to worry about who owns the land or buying it up or assembling a parcel. But the housing that was sold on that property, there's a waiting list for single-family homes or for single-room apartments at $1,000 a month in downtown Kent, more than my mortgage. And there's a waiting list. So I think there's demand for it. I think we certainly have the need for it, and PARTA would support AMATS drafting that letter and would send our own to our congressional delegation as well.
Thank you.
Hey, the old guy in the room, one of the old guys in the room. The whole planning process started in 1963, the city act of highway transportation budget built back then. It required long-term planning. It takes 15 years from concept to the start of construction on the project. We're planning 2 years at a time. We have no idea where we're going. We have an entire city of Akron interstate system that needs reconstructed, and ODOT has absolutely no clue where to start at and where to go. They're spending $1 million on a study to find out which length of the section they should work on next. We need dollars for proper planning. As a planning agency, we should be looking for a continuing stream of revenue that we can anticipate and project forward for many years down that graph. We're not getting those many years out of Washington. We've got to actively have those people turn the highway system back into a self-supporting system. Vehicle miles traveled, gas tax, instead of going from cents per gallon, go per sales tax on it. Last time it was knocked up to 18.4 cents a gallon, that was like an 18% tax on the price of a gallon, because a gallon was somewhere around $1 a gallon. We need that type of revenue. Consumer price index has been somewhere in the 3% range. The highway construction index has been in the 7% range for at least 15 years that I've been monitoring.
On average.
On average.
7% a couple
per
years
year.
Was 16 and 18.
It's been straight up and we're going straight down. And that doesn't even count the fact we get fuel-efficient cars and electric cars on a turn. And they take the same space and they need the same things. So we cannot, in this room, do enough to encourage them. Until they see it, we've got to just hammer it.
This is a new guy in the room question, but wanted to go back to what you had said about 12% of our roads are what you said in poor condition, and new guy in the room and somebody who's coming at this from more of a layman's outside perspective, somebody who's very interested in that. In practical terms, what does that mean? Like, how, like, is that something that another 2 or 3 days like Monday is going to take them out, or is that something that another, I mean,
kind of how poor?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I mean, is, in terms of making the case, is it likely that we're going to start seeing some very, very serious, very, very obvious, very, very, you know, very, very salient consequences from, you know, from these further delays in getting these back up to, you know, back up above that category?
Well, I think part of that would be a community by community, what's acceptable. Piece. If we all were on the same rating system, what would be acceptable in one community would be unacceptable in another. And part of that is the way we live. You know, people, we tell people, well, we can redo this surface, but now they're going to be driving at 45 miles an hour down your residential streets. And if you want that, you have a built-in speed bump. And, you know, when they leave, they drive at a reasonable rate, and they like the road smooth, but they don't want to be able to speed. There's all kinds of variables that go in that. Our planning dollars should be minimal, and maybe that's something we can do locally, is look at taking more of the money and planning better for the little bit we have left.
I think the definition of poor that Curtis kind of referred to was from one of our reports, and in layman's terms, it would basically be a road that really needs to be resurfaced now. You know, if you were driving down it, you would want to call your council person or whomever and say, this road is terrible. It needs to be fixed. We found about another 38% of the roads are what we called acceptable, where planning should be taking place right now to get them fixed, but they're not. You know, they could probably be resurfaced now, but they've got a little bit more time. So, order of magnitude, about half of our roads are in pretty good shape, and the other half either need some work or are pretty bad and need attention right now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even more so for the status of our bridges and the average of 49 years. I mean, everybody might remember what happened in Minneapolis when the bridge collapsed, but and I'm not saying we're there, but those bridges are only going to get older. And I think, and you know, the township, at the Summit County Township dinner, we had a great presentation on the bridge between the high-level bridge between Akron and Cuyahoga Falls, and I think just the amount of maintenance that they have to do on that bridge. Is that a 75-year-old bridge?
That was built in 1948, 66 years old.
66-year-old bridge, and how much it costs just to maintain that bridge to make sure it's still functional is incredible. And, you know, those kind of costs are only going to go up. I mean, I know ODOT is currently working on plans for the high Route 8 bridge over the valley, and that's, what, $100 million or whereabouts? So these, you know, these bridges are huge costs that, you can understand somebody getting upset, you know, but yeah, bumpy pavement or, you know, it's a bumpy ride or whatever, but when you start talking about things like, I think, you know, tangible things that could really be, you know, we're in trouble is if we start having bridges fall into those categories of being structurally deficient and obsolete, you know, and then don't not have enough money to make them all bring them back up at the same time.
I'll give you two examples. Oak Hill Road in Boston Township was closed a year and a half ago. It will not open ever again. I don't have money to replace $1 million landslide for 200 cars. Just upstream from that, 250 feet, a quarter mile, I have another section road on Everbrook. She's listening real closely. The condition of that carries about 250 cars. It is terrible. I can resurface it. The whole hill is like built on jello. It is moving. I got the metro parks on one side I have to work with. I got the national park on the other side I have to work with. You're not going to cut trees down there, put wider shoulders and grading and ditches and retaining walls in, which is going to cost me $1.5 million for another 200 cars. I'm not sure what we're going to do with that road. We're going to try to piece it together with duct tape and crack seal material as long as we can. But at some point in time, we may just have to put both sides at each end of it. It gets that serious at times. The road is not in good condition. There's not a lot of traffic on it. It's moving. It's going to cost a lot of money to fix it. My average pavement condition rating in Summit County, scale of 0 to 100, 100 being brand new, is a 65. ODOT's scale on their PCR ratings, they're running an 84, 85 on their conditions. Hudson desires to be in the mid-80s. Every community is a little bit different. First, talk about PCRs. PCR, pavement condition rating, the rating is based on a three-mile section. They take one snapshot and they evaluate the pavement. That's your rating on a three-mile section, which is great for the interstate system. PCI is every tenth of a mile. So you get about 30 times as many pictures, snapshots. You get a better rating, and you can play with what-if scenarios. What if I spent this much money? What if I spent that much? What if I change the types of materials I'm using on the road? We can do all that with it and come up with a better plan to drive your pavement condition index up higher. Because there's so different, 30 different data points to one data point, you can't convert one to the other. They're just different measures of the same thing. Like take your temperature with a thermometer, or mom, put your hand on your forehead and see how warm you are. It, both are measures. One's a little bit better. So that's about a nutshell we can bring about. There are some severe ramifications. Shaw Road Bridge went out today, this past week with the flooding. If I don't get money to replace it, I have to come up with $300,000. You got $300,000 in math? I'm looking for it.
Both tools are great planning tools, but you're absolutely right. The more detailed information you have, the better the decision. Because you can come down to it and just say, we're going to fix, replace this one section of road at $60 a square foot, or we can go resurface five streets at $6 a square foot. I mean, there's all kinds of trade-offs, but you're making informed decisions, whereas sometimes in the past it's been, fly by the seat of your pants, and honestly, an engineer in one community would look at it and say this, and you bring six other communities in and they would all have a different opinion. This is a little more scientific. Anything else? Chris?
Jason, does the staff want a motion from the policy committee to direct them to create a letter to our members of Congress to promote it, to try to get them to focus on this?
I mean, we could write one, but if you guys would like to make a motion, I think that would be helpful, because then we could write the letter and actually say this was kind of at the direction of elected officials in our region.
I would like to make a motion that the staff prepare a letter to our congressional representatives urging them to establish a reliable source of dedicated funding for transportation projects that is sufficient that we can plan on a long-term basis.
Second.
I'll second it. I have something to add to it. If you remember, this some time ago, there was some discussion about possible ways of raising funds. I brought to this to AMS. My former boss John Drew and I mentioned it to APTA and OPTA. We definitely feel that there's a possibility there could be funds raised by a tire tax. And I continue to keep saying that. I think there's opportunities to raise money through a tire tax. So I just want to bring that to the table.
Chris, back to you for comments.
Frank just said there are a variety of options as to possible sources. And I think, as far as my motion is concerned, the motion is intended to be flexible enough that the staff should urge Congress to consider whatever options are available for sources of revenue. But focusing mostly on what Joe said, there needs to be a viable source of funding that's dedicated to transportation projects that's reliable enough that planners can make plans over an extended future so that we don't face our situation we have with the kind of backup stuff which is 50 or 60 years old. We got to figure out whether to save this one or save that one and let the other one go.
Joe, do you have anything? This is second.
I'll continue my second.
Any other comments? All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Against? Motion passes. Just a quick side note, because I think we discussed it, but you threw a date out when we're going to lose the current funding. That's this summer?
August, I believe.
And that's typically when we're longer between our meetings, so maybe some of this needs to be expedited.
I believe we have a meeting in July, which we could, you know, bring that. We could even email, you know, beforehand and take it from there.
Letter?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think my plan is we can probably have a letter out next week, but in July we'll definitely
have an update.
Yeah, we'll give you guys the late, because I think in July you'll either hear us say they're gonna transfer more general revenue into the highway trust fund, or you'll hear us say batten down the hatches. I'm sure they're gonna come up with a solution in time. It'll probably be the former, but we'll keep you posted.
Thank you. On to resolutions 2014-06, adopting the AMATS Coordinated Public Transit Human Services Transportation Plan. Nate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. Comprising the bulk of your board packet this afternoon is attachment 6A, and that is a copy of the resolution 2014-06, and then there is a copy of the AMATS Coordinated Public Transit Human Services Transportation Plan. That's quite a mouthful. We refer to it as the coordinated plan generally for brevity. This plan is required by the FTA to guide the Section 53 transit funding that comes to our area. That is funding that helps fund projects to enhance the mobility of senior citizens and those with disabilities. In addition to those target groups, this report also focuses on the needs of those of low income. The purpose of the report, of the plan, is to determine the needs of primarily these three target groups, to evaluate current service available in the area, to identify any gaps between those two, and most importantly, to offer recommendations to address those gaps. Coordination is a very important part of the process. The plan works with many groups and stakeholders in our region to ensure that the transit administrations, the social service agencies, and other transportation providers are all on the same page. And when they're all working together, we can best leverage the transportation assets available to our area and avoid redundancies in service whenever possible. We have a coordinated plan in existence currently. The last one was passed in 2008. This update is necessitated by changes made in MAT 21, the current transportation legislation in effect. And because of those changes, we had to go through this update. Some of the changes brought about MAP 21 are that transit-related funding programs that existed in the past that made up a large part of the coordinated plan have either been phased out or mostly rolled up into other programs, and we needed a new plan to reflect those changes. There are also many new types of projects available because of MAP 21, as are the list of recipients of funds that come to our area has been expanded. The plan needs to reflect that as well. Also, 2008 was quite a while ago. We've had the census and several, a lot of data available since then. We wanted this plan to reflect the newest, most accurate data available to our area. To make this new plan more concise was an important goal. The other one was 126 pages. We're not too concerned with pages, but it took a while to read through there. We really thought it'd be nice to create a plan that's more readable and could serve as a quick reference to anyone who's interested in these issues and maybe seeking funding. So this one's about a two-third reduction in size, and we still think it contains a lot of the important content from the old one and some new important analyses that we've added. Also, we wanted to set clearer priorities than the last one was a bit ambiguous at times as to the priorities where we wanted to direct funding for the region. This one, we hope, is a little more clear as to our regional priorities. Outreach is another very important part of this planning process. And it's an interesting opportunity because we get to leave the bubble of agencies that we typically work with, and we get to meet with a lot of social service agencies and things that we unfortunately don't interact with as often as we probably should. There were multiple meetings, public meetings involved in the planning process. We created surveys, the public comment period has been advertised in a number of venues, all the libraries in Summit County, through the Beacon Journal, of course, so we had what we think is a well-advertised public outreach process. Through the whole planning process, we've had discussions with more than 40 social services agencies and other providers of transportation in the region. We've got a lot of great input about their needs, and we also got a lot of input directly from citizens as well. We had a public comment period that was about 2 months in length, in which we received that input. And what we think really importantly is we received a lot of input from the Wayne County portion of the AMATS area, who we just don't hear as much from sometimes. And in Wayne County, they have a small transit system that serves nowhere but Worcester, leaving out Chippewa Township, Doylestown, Witten, and Arlo area. They don't have any transportation options at all there, so it's really good. They were really interested in our planning process, so we spoke with them to kind of share ideas with each other, and I think it's going to really contribute to the benefit of both of our plans and eventually get service to those people, very important, we believe. And we also worked closely with Metro and PARTA throughout the process. They had a tremendous amount of input and made the plan just that much stronger. We've received many comments through the period, and all of them have been incorporated either directly or some of them were really specific, maybe for a regional plan, but we've made sure that they were represented in spirit through the plan. Since our the technical advisory committee and the citizens involvement committee last week received just two more minor comments. One of the maps within the plan includes senior citizen facilities, assisted living facilities around the region. There were a couple that they wanted to add. We'll certainly do that, so those would not be reflected in the plan in front of you, but we can amend that real quickly and get that all set back in the office. Overall, it's been a very nice, enjoyable, collaborative process, and we want to emphasize that this plan is just the starting point for coordinated transportation. This sets some of the basic ground rules and direction, but it's generated a lot of interest, and we're already speaking with a lot of different agencies around the United Way, for instance, who are really interested in implementing a lot of the things in the plan. So we continue to keep this process going forward to really understand the needs of senior citizens, the low income, and those with disabilities in our area, and try to fund projects that will greatly contribute to their mobility through the area. The staff recommends approval of the document, and I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone has about it.
No questions? Is there a motion?
Just a comment, and then I'll follow up with a motion. I'd just like to commend your staff. You did a fantastic job putting this together. I really appreciate all the effort. That's certainly something that we have to have. We have a triennial review coming up, and they're going to ask for it. And it's very helpful to us to have us play such a role in it. So I appreciate that. And with that, I would make a motion to approve the document.
Thanks, Mark. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Resolution 2014-07. Mr. Gardner.
Resolution seeks to add recently awarded federal funds to the TIP for Metro RTA in fiscal year 2014. ODOT is awarding these funds through its Ohio Transit Preservation Partnership Program. These are ODOT attributable funds that are being flexed over to us for use for transit service. Metro is requesting the addition of $250,000 total funds in fiscal year 2014 for the rehabilitation of two commuter buses. This project will be funded at 80% federal share derived from state attributable CMAP funds. That would be at $200,000 in federal funds. The purchase and installation of new and more efficient engines will allow Metro to continue their North Coast Express commuter service to downtown Cleveland. The staff is requesting approval of Resolution 2014-07. The TAC and CIC both recommend approval.
Any questions? Motion.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion?
Just a comment. Would like to again thank MS for support with this. We've seen at Metro a lot of growth in ridership on our intercounty services, and as the region stretches out, it's really important for people to get from place to place. And being able to again thank ODOT too, being able to do this with existing bus as opposed to trying to buy new ones, which are a lot more expensive, is very cost effective for us. So thanks to ODOT and MS.
Thanks, Rich.
Anything further? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Resolution 2014-09. Mr. Gardner, you have to leave.
Thank you. Attachment 6C. Annually, the AMATS Policy Committee adopts a work program and budget for the upcoming fiscal year. The fiscal year begins July 1st. The work program identifies the staff planning activities that will take place in the upcoming fiscal year and describes the funding sources that will be used to pay for them. A draft of the FY 2015 work program was approved by the Policy Committee in January. It was subsequently submitted to ODOT and the Federal Highway Administration for their review and comment. No significant changes were requested to the work program. The major elements of the work program remain the same as the version approved in January. This includes the development of a new TIP according to the standard two-year cycle of TIP development, the continued maintenance of the regional transportation plan, the traffic counting program, the integration of planning requirements following the passage of MAP 21 were also included in the work program. The local share amount also remains the same as the one approved in January, approximately $155,000, and local share dues is requested in order to fund a total budget of $1.8 million for metropolitan planning. Staff is requesting approval of the fiscal year 2015 work program. Would be pleased to answer any questions.
So moved.
Okay. Motion second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Resolution 2014-10.
Resolution 2014-09 and 10 were both packaged together as attachment 6D.
My apologies. On to 2014-11 then.
2014-09 and 10 are the reaffirmation of the regional transportation plan and the TIP and self-certification of the planning process. 6D are the two resolutions together.
Thank you.
These are two routine resolutions that AMATS must pass every year in order to remain certified as a metropolitan planning organization. So we bring these to the policy committee every May. Resolution 2014-09 affirms AMATS' annual approval of the current regional transportation plan, transportation outlook. The same resolution also reaffirms the existing TIP and affirms the consistency of both of these documents with the state implementation plan for air quality conformity. Resolution 2014-10 certifies that the AMATS transportation planning process is being implemented in compliance with all applicable federal requirements. The MS transportation planning process is conducted under the supervision of ODOT. The staff recommends approval of these two resolutions. The TAC and the CIC both concur in their approval. And we will please answer any questions.
I would make a motion that we approve both resolutions.
Resolution 2014-09 and 10.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Both motions, or both resolutions, are successful. My apologies. 2014-11, Mr. Poulet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 6E is Amendment 14 to the current Transportation Improvement Program. This amendment adds a new project, it cancels the project, and revises five existing projects. The new project that's being added is State Route 261 West Avenue in Talmadge. This is a resurfacing project scheduled in fiscal year 15. MS is funding this with $25,000 in STP funds, and our portion of this is for base repair and curb ramps. The project being canceled is Cyberling Way Right-Away. This is a project that was set up for a property purchase in the Goodyear development. It is being canceled and the funds are being transferred to the other original Cyberling Way project. The project's being revised. State Route 14, the funding is being increased and construction is being moved from fiscal year 14 to fiscal year 15. Cyberling Way, the engineering and right-of-way funds are being moved from fiscal year 14 to fiscal year 15. Interstate 76, the funding is being increased. State Route 91, Darrell Road, is MS is adding funding for pavement repairs in fiscal year 15. And State Route 93 Manchester Road, the same. AMATS is adding funding for pavement repairs in fiscal year 15. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them. If not, the staff recommends approval.
Motion.
So moved.
Second. Motion and second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Other business.
Just one quick word. I just wanted to thank all of you again for the motion on sending the letter. I think that's going to give it a little extra oomph when we write it. We will plan on getting one out next week. We'll make sure it goes to all of our members. And when you get that letter, if you have questions or any other ideas on things we can do to help with moving forward the transportation bill, or if there's anything we can do to help you with information or whatnot, as you reach out to Congress people and so forth, let us know. We'd be happy to help.
Question on the letter. We don't have to wait until July to send a letter to our congressman. You can do that ahead of time.
That's what I want to do next week.
I don't want to wait until July. I want to send it now.
No, that'll probably go in the mail by next Wednesday.
Okay. I have a couple more things. On this, there's no time. When this event is being done?
Krista? Registration will start at like 8:30 to 9, and then it'll go until about 3:30. Okay. We're going to do a bike ride starting.
Will they get a more detailed flyer or something that shows the time and agenda?
It's all available at switchinggears.com.
Okay. So if you go to the website on there, Frank, it should talk about how the day will unfold.
This is in Portage County, and we'll just put the word out about it.
Thank you.
Any other old business? Motion for one other thing. Next meeting is July 17th, 1:30.
I do have one more thing.
Oh, I apologize.
This is a Portage County thing. I am telling you, AMS, and all of you, if you are in Portage County, you can go on Chestnut Street by Robinson Moore Hospital. I've lived in Ravenna all my life, and the change that AMS has helped the city of Ravenna put in that sidewalk is unbelievable. You need to go see it. You guys need to get the city of Ravenna and do a ribbon cutting, I'm just telling you. Get some pub out of this.
We'll be there.
Get some pub out of this.
Thanks, Frank.
All right.
Motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
So moved.